In this podcast, I'm going to wrestle with the pros and cons of using a Vietnam War story as a fertile teaching tool, a teaching activity at school. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific and, of course, in this case, some teaching aspects. Now, the potted war story is from my good friend, Phil Allman. I'll give you a bit of story about how we met. And he worked with Australian Navy intelligence, and he was a veteran of the Malaya emergency. This is where Australians were up in Malaysia, quelling a communist uprising there. And by and by, we got involved as friends to the Americans in the Vietnam War, and he had the job of getting in a little boat coming in at night, and North Vietnamese, with the courtesy of the Russians, had these surface-to-air missile systems that they were deploying on the coast of North Vietnam. That's a good reason they'd probably want a surface-to-air missile. And he would go and engage the radar, so the radar would lock on his little boat, and he would take a bearing to the radar and then scurry away before he got attacked. So I don't know how that went. And then a little while later, come back at a different angle and getting the two bearings, get a location of the Vietnamese radar, which is of very great importance or great interest, not to the Australians but to the Americans. So that would be passed off to the Americans. And we won't go into the grisly aspect of war after that. This, of course, is something which can be developed to an authentic class exercise. First of all, I'll just go across the why would you teach something with a bit of edge to it? Now, there's many aspects to getting the correct lesson. Like, you can really build up the situational lesson and take a while to do it and ensure you've got everyone there. So there's the investment to the leader, and then there's the length of time with the learning experience, and then there's sort of evaluation, what did they learn, and proving and reuse. So if you teach them something and never use it again, they become a very much throwaway generation. Or if you take too long, they don't have long enough on the learning experience. Or if you then cut down the amount of time that you do introducing the activity, so if you are very pressed and it's a small period activity which doesn't last a long time and it's not authentic, you can have it basically peel away. A few people who've had distractions will get distracted, and you'll spend a lot of your time getting your class back on course. But if it's an authentic activity where people can imagine it, and it's a group activity and people can animate or activate all their different aspects of it, that's a very good learning activity. So when I heard of Phil's story, I thought, oh, look, this is a good learning activity to sort of recreate the situation, have people come in, the radar lock on them, be given an angle and go back and actually locate it. Now, obviously, what you would do without telling them is, in the location process, you would pass from the people on the Vietnamese side through an error creation thing, and so the angle that they would get would be slightly wrong. And so, as they did this activity, they would get their location wrong over a period of time. So they could repeat it several times, or come in and do various things to vary the error. And obviously, taking errors are responsible for different angles. So, from a teaching point of view, it's got a lot of plus points, being very authentic having sufficient complexity that people can have different roles of introducing the error and plotting. and going around the place and evaluating, and it's got a positive result. And then you can move that activity on to the next thing. This basic scientific method, where the data you get is maybe of variable importance and of variable reliability, and there's cost of taking the data, in this case time or place, so you can get good data by going in very close, and all various things like that. So to me, looking at it from a distance, it's got a lot of good aspects. So before I discuss it any more deeply, there's a few things to perhaps discuss. There's circumstances that Phil and I met up. There's, I suppose, the circumstances of Australia and the Vietnam War, which will tell you some of the sensitivities of mentioning anything to do with that, and the problems. And so that's Phil, the Vietnam War, and the current Australian society. Now let's talk about before that the idea of something edgy. There's a bit of edginess here. There's obviously people aren't loving each other in the Vietnam War. There's one side getting its surface-to-air missile. There's the other side trying to find out information about it. And there are a few cases where a certain amount of surprise. There's a certain edgy information, and the kids absolutely loved it. And so this is a separate example. I have read the biographies and theses on Newton, and people asked about Newton's childhood, and one of the things is that he was an unwanted child. His natural father died. His stepfather didn't like him, put pressure on the mother. The mother put him in school, and at school someone bullied him and said, your mother doesn't like him. And Newton took exception to this and beat up his bully, and then suddenly began to study very hard to beat that person at everything possible. So that sort of event transformed Newton. And there's a whole other, any number of series of stories. But for instance, when they heard that, the boys at a particular age really loved that idea. So you don't know. So this is one of the things about, you can be cautious about your edginess and whether it takes the right side. There's another story about Cavendish, which you've got to watch it. So if you tell too much stories, they just walk away. This scientist is really weird. But they like the story of Cavendish measuring voltage before the voltmeter, by actually hooking himself up to high voltage and getting his butler to measure the screams of it. So he would, volts versus screams would give him a sensation of voltage. Now, that was just, there are many stories about Cavendish, which are sort of not that nice if you're teaching a split class, the way that Cavendish couldn't look people in the face and couldn't stand being in the presence of women. So there's a lot of bad stories, or stories about Edison. There's a lot of edgy stories, which when you come to it, we as history, we've moved on. We no longer find things back then politically correct. So I suppose it's interesting that in the rare instances that we didn't intervene and it's worked fantastically well, it's got people's interest up. Other things like Tesla being in love with the pigeon towards the end. I've forgotten what he's called, his pigeon friend. These insane things, or Alexander Graham Bell teaching his dog to speak. All these things, if you just layer it on too much without an activity or a built activity, you can just wind up making scientists and scientific history looking weird. But I think when you really look back to any level of analysis of history, is weird that you usually have one group of people beating up another group of people for what seems to be to them, really sound reasons at the time, and you've got to take a bit of a step by it. So there is an overall edginess that you don't immediately discard. You think about it for a while. So this is a bit edgy, and you'll think about it. So that's it. Just repeat so people's memories are there. There's an activity called triangulation of a particular location and error and importance of it and edginess of it. And we have to go through a whole series of unpacking. So Phil Allman, obviously, I've had a heart operation, and part of a heart rehab is you go to the hospital several weeks later and start doing some basic rehabilitation exercises. And there'd be 20 people in the class, and you just chat and walk and talk through them. How seriously people take something, if they're still tense or if they're mellow. And Phil and I were naturally a bit more sort of appreciative, less judgmental. I don't know how it came. And it turned out both that he and I had had experience with intelligence units, or working with intelligence units. And initially I found out that he'd been working with police intelligence. So this is the police which will listen to the radio, track radio messages, cross-correlate stuff, report intelligence information with other agencies. He'd worked with that for many years. And so one of the things is not jumping immediately to conclusions. So we stuck up a good friendship. And so it's if you've got a heart condition, you're a bosom buddy of mine. So I have a whole heap of new friends around the mountains, around the district. You know, if you've got a heart operation, you're my mate, you're a friend. Just overall conversation, I began to find out about his military service. And again, it's sort of very sensitive. And the sort of the general idea of there's an area causing you a problem, and you just triangulate that problem and alert people in general to the origin of that problem is a general good tactic in life. So if someone or some situation is irritating you, you don't go in and actually create a crisis. You get a general perception of that from a number of different angles and pass it on to be processed in a bigger picture. So that's the general gist of how how it came together. Now we have to deal with the thorny issue of the back then issue of the Australians in the Vietnam War. So I'm aware that there's Vietnamese listeners and all that type of stuff, but Australia operated in Vietnam from 63 to 72, about 10 years, and over that 10 years we fought in a few battles, and some 421 Australians died. And for Australia, that's a very large number of people. So there were 60,000 Australians who rotated through Vietnam, so not all of those fought. So a lot of those were sort of working on the airports or building stuff or engineers and stuff like that, or safely tucked away in ships. So it was actually quite a dangerous place. And of that 421, roughly 200 of those people were conscripts. That's people who didn't want to go off to war or had no choice, called Nashos, and so they went off. And so that's quite a lot. So in some years, we actually lost 100 just over 100 people in a couple of years. The sort of big year it began was 66, and I think it was a D company of one RAR got caught by a North Vietnamese battalion of Long Tan, and there was 18 people killed. So they're actually big numbers by Australian standards. So in all of Afghanistan, which was a longer war, there were 30 people lost. And some other places, there's been zero people lost. So it's still quite a traumatic war on both sides. So it's a very sensitive thing to talk about. So nowadays, if you're sort of intelligence. Company, there's sort of a bit of angst still talking about the Vietnam War. So that's covered the unusual positions where you link up and hear an authentic story, and that authenticity, if you can mold it properly, it would be an excellent classroom, fertile classroom off-the-shelf activity. And then how I met Phil, my mate Phil, still a great person, and you can phone up and just have a general chat. And both he and I, he's gone through complications, and I've gone through heart complications. So it's quite good to keep in link. And then the Australian Vietnam War story, to give you an overall view. So it was pretty serious. People were shooting each other, and it was pretty tough, and of course there's a whole lot of Vietnamese refugees, and I think there's a general loving with Vietnam and Australia at the moment. So it's all a plus. It's all turned out to a happy ending. I don't want to do it. I'm sure if I said it was a happy ending, I'd upset a lot of my people I used to train with. That'd hate me saying that. The other aspect is to actually, depending on what sort of society in Australia has become, I wouldn't say gun phobic, but I think we had a mass shooting down in Port Arthur in 96, around that time there, and they just said, no guns. Everyone hand in all your guns. And so even before that, the police would come down hard. You definitely wouldn't be able to have a gun in public or a gun visible. In fact, all guns would have to be secured, and you'd have a hard time, say, if you had a knife or anything, knuckle dusters or anything a bit risque, you'd have a whole lot of problems with the police. You'd have to explain, why do you have it, and all that type of stuff. So much so that my friends were just saying, look, you just can't carry a hockey stick in public. And I must admit, I haven't seen people carry hockey sticks in public for a while. This is way back when I was a kid. You know, people would go to a sporting event, hop on a Melbourne train, and the police would say, what are you doing carrying that hockey stick? And they'd be in hockey gear. And so the guns have gone away, and definitely, I don't know, if someone knew you had a gun, there'd be all this whispering what's going on. So it looks at different areas of Australian society it's in, so any discussion is hard now. For instance, you can't buy a sharp knife if you're under 18. In a supermarket, and things like that. Obviously, they have knives for sale, but you can't can't buy anything like that. I don't know how effective it is. But society has definitely changed from the Vietnam War to now, and you've got that added complexity. So I myself don't know how this exercise would work. Now, coming across to it in detail, going back to the exercise, you'd have a map of a fictitious place. You'd say that's the inspiration of it. You'd have a fictitious place, and you would allow someone to put a point on the map. Someone would have a point, another group would have a point where they are, and then given that point, coordinates read across, x, y coordinates point across, you would then read the exact angle between the two points, the radar and the little boat coming in, and then that would be passed to a third group, which would add an angle and pass it onto the boat. They'd have to record that and then do a second approach, and they wouldn't be told that the person, the group that's been passed through, adds an error to it, then it would become apparent as they repeat it that there is an error and an angle to it, and then you get them to actually identify the parameters in which they're going on and have a general discussion. And obviously, if you could rotate the various people through it, they'd be able to reverse engineer and understand the origin of errors and plotting. So in terms of worthwhile science and authenticity and edginess, this has definitely got a number of things aligned, but it is indeed a complex world that we live in. This is Peter Hill Explains. Thanks for listening.